Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and today I'm joined by Alex Brown, once again, to discuss a very hot topic. In fact, the title of this episode of the podcast is MBA Crisis or the Year of the MBA Applicant. So, Alex, thanks for joining to discuss this somewhat popular topic these days about declines in application volume and what it all means.
Yes, I'm looking forward to the discussion, Graham.
So I think to start, I want to lay out some of the facts. Always good when we're going to have an argument or debate about something to just have some basic facts in front of us. And, you know, the first thing I wanted to point out is that the U.S. business schools received about 135,000 applications this past admission season. So that being the 2018-2019 season. And that's down about 9% from the previous year. I should also note that the year prior was down 7%. So we're clearly in a kind of period of declining application volume, and it's starting to add up. International applications to U.S. MBA programs are down 14%. But the domestic population's down too. And, you know, schools like Tuck were down over 20% in application volume. Kellogg and Yale down over 15%. Duke close to 15%, and even Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, MIT, they were all down 5% or more. So we're clearly in a little bit of a crisis mode when it comes to application volume, although I do encourage people to think about this in the longer term of things. But those are some of the basic facts. Any thoughts about that? I mean, I know there's been article after article written about this. I mean, I was doing a little Google research and saw there's, Forbes has an article about the MBA degree is in crisis. You know, the Wall Street Journal, is an MBA still worth it? So everywhere you look, people are talking about this. So what are your kind of opening thoughts on these numbers and things?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, working in the MBA admissions field, this is quite disturbing data that you're relaying, and then that's sort of, again, blown up, as it were, by the sort of media coverage. Some media coverage tends to want to demonize the MBA degree a little bit, I think, even in good times, in terms of application volume. I think what's really important is for us to get a really good understanding as to why these application volumes are down, and whether this is a long-term trend. And I do think to some degree we can argue that there is some long-term effects at play in terms of how the marketplaces are adjusting and changing. And to some of the effects are simply short-term in nature. And the MBA application volume, as we know, Graham, has typically been in a counter-cyclical cycle to the US economy, especially as we're talking mostly about the top-tier US-based MBA program. So clearly, the US economy under Trump has gone gangbusters for whatever reasons, and that does mean that on the domestic applicant side, there's less incentive to duck out of the economy for a couple of years.
Right. I mean, I would argue that so the U.S. is in a period of fairly sustained growth that dates back from, when right after the financial crisis. So really, since 2008 or so, as things kind of, recovered, we've been, the U.S. has been growing. And so the economy is definitely hot. And that, as you say, we saw that even when we were working in admissions at Wharton. As soon as a bubble burst or there was a recession, application volume would shoot up because the opportunity cost of leaving the workforce was much lower, because people were often leaving the workforce because they were fired or laid off or whatever. So people rushed to business school. Whereas now, places, a lot of these tech companies, et cetera, are hiring, and they, they'll take people without an MBA necessarily. So I think that is important to note. The other thing I should add before we dive into kind of what is going on here is that when it comes to the kind of historical data on application volume, I just want to remind our listeners, and hopefully the media, other media outlets are listening too, that, these declines that we've seen over the last couple of years are coming off of what for many schools were kind of all-time or near all-time highs in application volume. So when I look at the overall, number of applications received by some of these top schools, they're not shocking numbers. There's still plenty of people applying. And in fact, they're still historically pretty decent numbers. But I think the media loves to jump on a story. And I think there is a story here. And I do want to unpack what you know, what we think those factors are that are contributing to the declines. But I just want to remind our listeners that it's not like Harvard's out on the street corner begging for people to come to do their MBA, So just want to make that clear. So, what do you think are some of the reasons? I mean, we talked about a hot economy and how that historically has always been a reason for declines in volume. But I think there are other things at play. Any that you want to share?
Yeah, sure. So we can go through probably two or three other real important reasons. The first that I'd put to you, Graham, is the increasing relevance and quality of MBA programs outside of the United States, whether they're the European MBA programs, which have been around a little bit longer, than the Asia, MBA programs that are developing in the Asian economies. So what I mean is, I think international students looking at US programs have now more options in other parts of the world, including in their own backyard. And then that also combines with the better developed economies around the world. Because I think, and we talked about this a little bit before we came online, the US was the sort of marquee economy of the world. And, you know, lots of high caliber students from around the world are looking to go to a top tier MBA in the US in order to then participate in clearly the most vibrant economy in the world. And I think it is still the most vibrant economy in the world, but other economies are gaining ground. Other business schools outside of the US are gaining ground.
Right. So, for instance, someone from China or India, it could have been the case in the past that they would be using the MBA not only to get a great education, because the MBA itself was kind of synonymous with America. It's an American degree. And so they would go to the US to get the degree, but they would also want to stay because, you know, working in their own economy wasn't terribly exciting necessarily. And I think, you know, that's changing, right? So obviously there's a lot happening in India and China. Those are the two that everyone talks about, but there's you know, vibrant business activity around the globe. And I think, yeah, people are recognizing that. And I agree with you. Going to CEBS or the ISB in India or HEC or INSEAD in France or, you know, any number of schools in the United Kingdom or
LBS, yeah. Oxford, Cambridge.
Yeah, there are a lot of good schools. Okay, so clearly international candidates have more options. I think there's something else too that's, I guess, closely related, which would be U.S. immigration policy and the rate at which the U.S. is kind of doling out those H-1B visas for people who want to stay long term. That has slowed. One could argue, and fairly convincingly, that the Trump administration isn't exactly a pro-immigration administration. And I think that's done two things. I mean, number one is I think that candidates are worried about whether they can stay. As of now, any MBA graduate in the U.S. can stay for 1 year and work as a part of the practical training program that the U.S. has in place. But in order to stay after that, you got to get a visa, and those visas being harder to come by, I think, is having an impact on people's interest in coming. I also think that the administration's sort of stance around immigration is sort of, painting a picture that maybe is a little less welcoming, right? So if you're an international student, you may kind of think twice, and that's unfortunate, I think, in a big way. But anything else on that one? I mean, I think that's another big point here. So aside from there being great offerings abroad, the idea of staying in the U.S. seems less feasible to a lot of these internationals.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And we see a lot of conversation on Livewire and various other MBA admissions forums that speak directly to that point of the certainty for candidates that do come to the U.S. to get the internship that they need between the first and second year, and to get the opportunities they're truly seeking when they're competing with domestic candidates for those same opportunities that don't have the visa issues to deal with. So I think both those issues, then the better opportunities at home for an international student in a better marketplace at home, so it's more attractive to work at home, in combination with the increased anxiety for getting a job in the US, has tilted the balance a little bit on the margin, as it were, for the international student to perhaps consider more closely their domestic options or even other international options outside of the US. So they might be going to European schools, from Asia and so on and so forth.
Sure. Yeah. And I know we've met many an applicant who sort of said, look, I'll go to the U.S. if it's to go to like Harvard or Wharton, you know, or Stanford or a kind of top school. And then like after that, I'm happy to stay local. I've got some great opportunities and programs on offer in my home market. So I think it's probably hurting the kind of, you know, next batch of schools in the U.S. probably more than it is the top schools. But in any event, one of the things I hear in the media a lot is, oh, you know, tech is hot and tech companies don't care if you have an MBA. They don't like the MBA. And so, you know, what do you make of that? Because I think it's a little odd in that they do hire so many MBAs anyway. So I'm a little confused by that statement, but I know you have some thoughts on this.
Yeah, I mean, I think this affects the domestic applicant pool probably more so. But certainly when I was an admissions officer at Wharton, you know, finance and consulting were the big feeder industries for candidates coming to the MBA. And these candidates were going through specific analyst programs with the idea then that many of those candidates would get an MBA and then return to the industry, if not the firm itself. So it was almost sort of standard operating procedure in those two industries. So the finance industry has taken a massive hit in terms of attractiveness, I think, for MBA candidates and so on and so forth with the financial crisis or whatever it might be. And not that it's disappeared by any stretch of the imagination, but it's certainly suppressed a little bit. The tech industry is sort of the up-and-coming sort of feeder industry, potentially coming for candidates coming for the MBA. Certainly for candidates with an MBA seeking you know, their careers post MBA in the tech sector. So, again, we talked about this a little bit before we came on air, Graham. Whilst the finance industries and consulting industries have these formalised programs to send people to the MBA for people to then come back, and while the tech industries are more and more so hiring MBAs. So you look at the top business schools and which are the top employers, and Amazon appears and various other tech firms now appear on those lists. It's less clear that they have these sort of more structured sort of analyst type programs that then push people to get their MBA, such that once they've got an employee post undergrad, are they truly encouraging that employee to go get the MBA?
Right. So a bright person who graduates from MIT and runs off to work at Google or something, there may not be that, you know, kind of push back out into the MBA. Whereas I would argue that I think the consulting firms and banks have more of a push and a pull, right? So they're hiring lots, but they're also pushing a lot of their younger professionals into the MBA. So I think some of that could be at play as well. I also, you know, I've heard people speculate around the fact that today's kind of applicants, which are still millennials, we're kind of getting towards the end of that generation, but it's still millennials, that they're a little more risk averse when it comes to taking on debt. And so the MBA having a large price tag comes into play. And also that they're maybe not as patient about this idea of going to college, then working for 4 years, and then getting back into studies with an MBA. And that brings us to another subject. So hopefully you can kind of touch on both of these a little. And that is that the rise of the kind of pre-experience business degrees, what we would call specialized masters. So you finish college and you go straight into a master's in finance or management or big data or whatever it might be. So any thoughts on those areas? I mean, I know that as we move down this list of reasons, I think each of these subsequent reasons has probably less of a bearing. Like, I think the big ones we've tackled, right? The economy and immigration and more MBA programs abroad. But these are factors, I think, that are starting to work their way into the discussion.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think these are important factors in terms of, like you say, the opportunity to get a one-year master's coming straight out of undergrad before pursuing the career. That's becoming more acceptable. And I think also sort of that dovetails a little bit with this idea is just the other opportunities. There is frankly more opportunity for continuing education with sort of traditional universities, as well as all other kinds of tech firms that are basically outsourcing university degree programs for the universities. So, and I work for, you know, I do some freelance work for one of those firms and teach. Basically, I'm a course leader for a class that's taught out of Columbia Business School, and I'm sat right here in Cornwall, which is, you know, this could not have happened, you know, however many years ago. And, you know, if we're, you know, teaching in the particular course I teach, there's 300 or 400 enrolled at any given time. It's crazy, the numbers. And, you know, on the margin, some of these people may have thought, you know, I'm going to go get an MBA in 3 or 4 years and do the traditional thing. Now, because of these opportunities to take online courses when they need to take them, continue working and so on and so forth, it's on the margin going to reduce that overall demand for the MBA, I think. So, you know, you've got your one-year masters, you've got your traditional continuing education, that being taught by top-tier universities, getting outsourced by other companies and so on and so forth. The marketplace dynamic is changing quite considerably. The opportunities for these guys to learn in lots of different environments is on the margin going to reduce the overall demand for the top tier MBA, even if just slightly.
Agreed. Yeah, I mean the traditional kind of US 2-year MBA model, there are just a lot of alternatives now. So I think you know, we can speak a little bit later about what some of the business schools are doing that's fairly innovative and, you know, kind of ways to address this. But I do think that overall, there's more competition, as you're saying, from like kind of online classes and what I think some are calling kind of micro masters, where you study, as you're saying, like bits and pieces as you need them. And maybe as you accumulate these classes, eventually they lead to a degree. But it's, you know, it's just sort of a way to get what you need when you need it. So that's coming into play. I think those are the main things. One, there are kind of two other kind of small things that I wanted to mention related to these declines and shifts in the demand for the MBA in the US. One is, amidst all this happening, we've seen this rise in the percentage of women in the MBA classroom. I think they fell short this year, but I guess last year USC was touting that they had 50% women in their class, in their MBA class. This year's class is a little below that, obviously, but even, you know, most of the top schools are well above the 40% mark now. And that would have been unheard of, you know, 20 years ago. So that's happening. Any thoughts about that? I mean, that's kind of an interesting development.
Yeah, no, I think it's very interesting. Again, when I was at Wharton, so we're talking upwards through to 2005, if we were hitting the 30% mark, it was a very good year. And we were doing a lot to try to encourage more gender parity in the applicant pool, but struggled. But I do think this is a good example of better market development from the top tier MBA programs and from the Forte Foundation and other resources, really encouraging more women to apply to business school, highlighting the value propositions and so on and so forth. So I do think this is an example of good market development on the part of these top business schools. And quite frankly, given the increased competitive environment that we've talked about, whether it's from overseas MBA programs or other continuing ed opportunities or one-year masters, this is absolutely necessary in order to sustain the numbers that are needed in the applicant pool to get the high-quality class profiles that the top tier schools are still able to get. So that's the interesting thing here, Graham. Whilst the applicant pool numbers are down, and there are fundamental reasons for that, and I think we've addressed that in a reasonably good fashion, what we haven't seen yet, certainly at the top tier schools, is any sort of suppression on the quality of the students in the classroom.
Yeah, and that's the good news. I think that the class profiles are holding pretty steady. In fact, I've been kind of surprised to see, you know, they're up, if anything, you know, with respect to like GMAT averages or GRE averages or GPAs. So the schools don't seem to have a shortage of qualified candidates yet. We're not at that kind
of... The key there, though, Graham, is at the top tier schools. And we do hear from schools, perhaps a little bit lower down the list of the US news rankings or whatever, maybe in the 30s and the 40s and 50s, they're the ones that are really going to struggle in this environment.
And there have been a good number of even, you know, lower ranked programs that have shuttered their full-time MBA, right? So that's happening. There's definitely some consolidation in the marketplace, or, you know, just sort of schools that are just deciding, you know, let's just do the online hybrid offering, or executive MBA only, or, you know, but at the top, for one reason or another, the schools still seem to have plenty of applicants to choose from. Although I think even there, we're starting to see, and we have our own internal data, thanks to the really terrific DecisionWire tool on clearadmit.com. So we have this data that our in-house data scientist has been diligently tracking, and it's showing us that, Alexandra Kelly, who works for ClearAdmit and is our data scientist, she's been looking at how many applications a candidate typically submits. And we've got data, thanks to DecisionWire, from the 2015-16 application season and up on through last season. So that's four seasons of admissions data. And, you know, kids generally apply to the same number of schools. You know, it's usually four and change on average. But what we've seen is the number of acceptances per candidate is rising. So, and this is, you know, you should read the article on clearadmit.com if you're listening and haven't done so, but we are seeing that, you know, when it comes to a qualified candidate who's applying to top schools, those candidates are tending to get more offers than they used to get. As for now, it's like, it's not even half an offer more per candidate, but it's growing, right? So we're seeing, so I would argue that, you know, in ballpark figures, someone who might have ended up with like a couple of offers in the past is now looking at three offers of admission. And we're also seeing that people with like three, four, five, and six offers, you know, are much more numerous in the pool than used to be the case. You know, it used to be you'd apply to like a handful of schools and you get into like a couple and you'd be happy. Now, you know, and I don't even want to get into the scholarship money that's being thrown around. So there's a bit of an arms race as the schools compete for a shrinking pool of qualified candidates, I would say.
So Graham, let me put it back to you, because you've written about this on your article on LinkedIn and so on and so forth. Given that we know that the applicant pools are down, we know the competitive marketplace is shifting globally, and we know that there are more opportunities now out there for candidates that typically apply to these top business schools. Has this impacted the value proposition that a top-tier business school offers candidates?
I would say for most candidates, if they could go to a very top-tier MBA program, that there's still a tremendous amount of value in doing so. So I don't actually think, and the other thing I would say is we've seen schools adjusting in really interesting ways to kind of accommodate this. So most schools now have, you know, early admission programs where or deferred admissions, sorry, where you can, you know, apply while you're in college and get in and know that you're going to go work for a couple of years and then that you've got a spot to come back and do the MBA. Or Duke Fuqua just announced that if you've done a master's in management, so if you are one of the many young people who decided to go straight and do a one-year master's, that you can come to their MBA program and complete it in 1 year. So I think schools are doing things. You know, NYU has a couple of highly specialized MBA offerings. Cornell has their tech MBA. These all tend to be kind of shorter format and more focused on specific industries. And so I think schools are making adjustments. But overall, like the idea of the value proposition of going to Harvard or Kellogg or Chicago or any of these kind of top schools, I think remains pretty strong. I did write a piece for LinkedIn about the value of the MBA, and so I do believe strongly still in the degree. You know, I think it provides a great education. It, you know, opens eyes, expands horizons. And, you know, I think one of the subtexts to a lot of these articles that are being written about, you know, application volume in free fall, MBA in crisis, you know, that there's they often like to sort of also take a stance of, well, the degree was never really worth anything anyway. You know, there's a lot of this sort of, there was a Wall Street Journal article actually that I found just completely off base where the guy was sort of saying, you know, I didn't need an MBA. You know, you always hear about people who are like, well, I'm a successful business person and I don't have an MBA. And I would say, you know, well, yeah, of course, there are people who go on to be successful. You don't need it. But I think for the rest of us, most kind of regular people, it's a great degree to pursue. You know, not everyone's going to start Apple Computer out of their garage. So I think, you know, it's sort of the rule rather than the exception. And yeah, again, changing with the times. And, you know, if you look at the salary, you know, look at Forbes return on investment ranking, like the MBA is still, you know, for people who attend a leading program, the return on investment is very clear. Most MBA graduates will generate a positive return on investment within 5 years of graduation. So, and that grows even throughout their career. So I still believe in the degree, and I think we do have some good news for people, though, Alex. Right? I think the good news is,
like you said, the DecisionWire data would suggest it's a great time to apply. Right? If those trends are continuing, the opportunities for applicants, good applicants, like top applicants. I'm not talking, you know, all of a sudden if you've got a 500 GMAT and a 3.0 GPA, you're going to get an offer from a top school. That's just never going to be the case. But for good applicants, strong applicants, it's definitely a good time to apply.
Yeah, I would say there has not been a better time in many years to apply to business school based on that. And I think the other thing that's really interesting is that the scholarship dollars, as I mentioned earlier, the scholarship dollars are being handed out even more and more kind of aggressively because schools know they're competing with one another to get the best applicants. And so, you know, that's not to say that you'll end up with like a free ride to go to Wharton or something, but if you apply to Wharton and a handful of other top schools, it's increasingly likely that, you know, you'll get more offers and that some of those offers are going to come attached with scholarship dollars. And so making the degree, you know, making the degree even more affordable, which is great. So, yeah, so I think this is a good time to apply. I might, you know, I think, Alex, when we set out to record this podcast and talk about this subject, we really just wanted to shed some light and offer what I hope is a more nuanced take on a subject that makes for great sound bites. I know there's been, you know, a zillion three paragraph articles about the MBA is, you know, is dead, you know, and then, so I guess what we're saying, the reports of the MBA's death have been greatly exaggerated, I would say, but there are a number of factors that are influencing application volume. And again, encourage people to think about all these different factors as they weigh the options here. But it's a great time to apply, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I would reinforce that, especially at top tier business schools. Again, further down the rankings, then that drop in applicant volume is clearly impacting the student body in terms of numbers and so on and so forth. But when you have a situation where you've got more qualified candidates than seats in the class, which is the case at top tier schools, it becomes a better and better time for candidates to apply. It's just a question of where we draw the line down the rankings, where it does become a bit of an issue, and as a result, schools get out of the full-time MBA program marketplace. And typically for those schools, the part-time program or their executive program are the programs that are financing their budgets anyway.
Yeah, and I have seen some of the schools that fall in that category have gone to take steps to actually just reduce the size of the full-time MBA as well. So we've seen schools say, you know what, we're just going to cut out a cohort of students and we'll make it a little bit smaller so we can maintain quality. So that is happening down as you look down in the rankings. But again, yeah, this is a good time. And I would also just encourage people to take a peek at DecisionWire if they're thinking about business school, because it's really instructive, as you can see, kind of what do the people look like who apply to top schools? Where do they get in? How much scholarship, you know, money have they been offered, and how are they deciding where to go? We view that as a really useful tool for people as they embark on this process. But again, thanks for taking a little bit of time, Alex, to talk about this, because I know our listeners have been wondering, and we just really wanted to weigh in and, as I said earlier, offer a nuanced view of what's happening.
Yeah, and just to make it clear, there are macroeconomic factors and global factors that are affecting change in the marketplace. And I think that's really super interesting. And it's also great that we have these top international MBA programs because, you know, in our business, we supporting the MBA program degree generally, not just, you know, those in the US. So, you know, kudos to schools like CEBS and you know, Oxford, Cambridge. These are all relatively new programs, ISB and so forth. And they are clearly able to now provide strong value proposition for top-tier candidates in those marketplaces.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's been exciting to follow because that's been a development that's occurred over our time in this industry. So yeah, really interesting. So yeah, stay tuned for more episodes of the podcast. Please continue to rate and review on iTunes or wherever you listen. We do have a number of listeners on Spotify now. So if you're a Spotify user, you can just find us there. No need to open up your iTunes or whatever you're doing to get to the podcast. And as always, you can dig through the archives on our podcast on the website. We have every episode that we've ever recorded there. Lots of great admissions advice and so on. But thanks everyone for tuning in. And Alex, thank you so much for weighing in on this topic.
Yeah, very interesting topic, Graham. Thank you very much for having me.